Hello and welcome to the Fit Like a Girl podcast. My name is Jackie Lindahl. I am a mom of two, an avid coffee drinker, and a certified personal trainer. I have been in the fitness industry for nearly 10 years, and I help women get fit, strong, and lose weight without losing their damn minds. If you're looking for help on achieving your health, weight loss, and fitness goals without all the fitness industry confusion and BS, you have come to the right place. Welcome back to the Fit Like a Girl podcast. My name is Jackie. I am your host, and I am here with Rhonda Danieluk from Healthy Concepts Personal Training. How are you?
I'm really good. How are you?
I am good. So you are, I would love to hear a little bit about you and your story and things like that, but you are a personal trainer and run your own personal training business. And so I would just love for you to tell me a little bit about yourself, maybe your own fitness journey, where you started, how you transitioned into personal training, and go from there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so funny, small world. Jackie and I both started our careers in the same path. I was a vet tech originally, which kind of brought me down this path of looking for a program that I could take where I could essentially learn how to help dog moms get fit alongside their dog, outside of the traditional going for runs and hikes and those things that you typically would think of, but actually build a training program for the dog so they also could build muscle and, you know, get fit alongside their dog mom.
That is so cool. So yes, we did both used to be vet techs in our former lives. So tell me a little bit about your time as a vet tech. What got you interested specifically in kind of fitness / human connection and training together, and kind of, I guess, have that be your niche for your goals for your fit or for your business?
Yeah. So my story is kind of a little bit strange. So if we want to go like way back to what you had said, like how did my fitness journey start for myself in general? So I was always a super active kid. If I was bored, I went and I would move my body. I'd go for a walk, I'd rollerblade, I'd go for a run, I'd do those sorts of things. I played sports in high school, so I didn't ever really struggle with my weight in high school. More so, I was probably a little bit too thin during those years because of how active I was and not eating well. Fast forward to graduating high school, went to college, and I somehow got out of that habit and gained the like notorious college 20. I wasn't playing sports anymore. And the gym wasn't part of my life. I didn't need to, right? Because when I was a teenager, you played sports and you did those things, but you didn't really learn what a training program looked like, or even for me anyways, we didn't have that. So I got engaged. I was like, oh my god, I gotta lose this weight. So I hit the gym, got a trainer. If I'm being honest, really, really undernourished myself. And I lost a lot of weight very, very quickly, and more than what I had even gained. Yeah. So I was smaller than I was on my wedding day than I was in high school.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
You went really far in that one direction.
I did. Yeah. So, you know, I kept my fitness up. I went to the gym. I always paid attention to what I was eating. But I probably stayed on the restrictive side for most of my young adulthood. Had a baby, quickly lost the baby weight, same ways, right? Lots of cardio, some lifting, restrictive eating. Had my second baby, same thing. Weight wasn't really hard to come off because I was so active at that point. It was a pretty normal part of my life. But I was just struggling with not feeling super fit, even though I was, you know, on the thinner side. And funny enough, actually my doctor said to me, he's like, start digging into nutrition some more. And his sister was a nutritionist, and he was like, check out some of these resources, get more information for yourself, you might be surprised.
Interesting. And
so that kind of, like, all this while I was working as a vet tech, mostly part-time with my kids being little. And he kind of sparked something in me, and I actually got my nutrition certification at that point.
Cool. So when you say that you were active, you'd lost the baby weight and that kind of thing, but you never felt fit, what was that like? What were those feelings when you say that?
Mostly because I think I was, I'm not a fan of this word, but I was very skinny. I didn't really have a lot of muscle development. Mainly I was just very thin. And so I could do a lot of the exercises, lots of cardio. My body had adapted well to that. But I didn't ever feel like, and maybe even this term I don't like, but it's an easy way to describe it for people, but like skinny fat. Like
That just it just creates an image. Yeah, absolutely.
yeah. So, and probably if I look back, I probably wasn't in that way either, but that's kind of how I felt. I just didn't feel strong.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. And it's interesting because you were active. Nobody in the world would say that you weren't active or you weren't doing things to take care of your health, but you just weren't maybe going about it in a way that felt good to you.
Yeah, because all along it was always about calories in, calories out.
So
So
tell me about this nutrition course and how that changed your perspective on things.
I took Precision Nutrition. I'm not sure if you're, I'm sure you're familiar
Very
with.
familiar,
Yeah.
yes.
And interestingly, started coaching people. And I had a mentor at that time, and she said to me, "You're coaching people differently than the way you live."
Oh, interesting.
Because I was weighing my food, I was doing all of those things, but I was teaching hand portions and a different, different levels. So that in precision nutrition, there's three levels of eating styles. And level one is you're very basic, and most people can stay at level one for their entire lives, using hand portions to kind of gauge how much they're eating and what they're getting. And I was more at the level two, towards level three of eating. And so she kind of encouraged me to live the lifestyle of the level one and see how it was. And interestingly, I didn't gain weight when I changed the way I was eating and not having to measure everything. And it actually took a lot of stress off of my plate by doing that. I feel like I went on a tangent. What was your initial question?
No, that was great. Just in how the nutrition course opened your eyes, and you described exactly that. And I think what's also really important to mention here is that you spent a lot of time tracking, which is so helpful in that it helps you learn how to eyeball food. So it was a good transition for you then to take a step back. You had a lot of, habits of already knowing how to eat for your body and stuff in place, and it was just allowing you to trust yourself that you can, in fact, stick with the positive habits while taking the stress of tracking away. That's so amazing.
Yeah. And I actually like I go back and forth. I do track here and there, just to kind of keep myself in check. And with my current coach, he likes to see my journals and things like that. But for the most part, I do eyeball. I don't necessarily pull out the scale unless something is like, I wonder what this actually is.
I'm very much the same where I tracked for so long that I can eyeball pretty good. And I'm very much like, I'm okay with eating the similar same foods every day. Like I'm very much a routine person. So I'm fine eating my yogurt bowl for breakfast pretty much every day because I know what's in it. It's easy. I don't even have to think about it. But yeah, that's awesome. I love that.
Yeah, so that it, really it was it came from me wanting to learn more about nutrition. And the biggest thing for me, the biggest takeaway probably, was that I was never focused on protein, which makes such a huge difference on your muscle mass.
It does.
So, and feeling strong and feeling good and having energy to do all of these things. So, that was like the biggest eye-opening thing is I knew a lot about how to lose weight, but I didn't know a lot about how to, well, first of all, maintain it, but also actually build strength while, becoming fit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure that you find this a lot with your clients too, but so many people, especially women, grossly undereat protein. And it's, the most important macronutrient to pay attention to in that it helps you stay full, it helps you build and maintain muscle mass. And it helps with like blood sugar regulation, like all of these things that it does that we are very much ignoring.
Yeah, and also like the misunderstanding of what actually high protein foods are.
Yes, not peanut butter.
Yeah, like peanut butter on your toast is not going to hit those 20 grams of protein. And if it is, you're eating a lot of protein, or at least a lot of peanut butter.
There's a shit ton of peanut butter that you got to eat to hit 20 grams of protein.
Yeah. So like even tying that back in. So as a vet tech, I was actually very interested in nutrition through my vet tech years. And I was the go-to for overweight dogs or allergy dogs, things like that. I was the one who kind of handled that portion in the clinics I worked in. Yep. And what, you know, is what I was seeing is like, just with our animals that are overweight, our people are in the same situation, and really often they go hand in hand. And so I'm a very empathetic person. I'm a very caring person. And so to be able to help people and their pets at the same time just seemed like a no-brainer to me.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And tell me a little bit let's talk about your time as a vet tech. I think I've done a podcast on my own time as a vet tech and stuff, but I'd love to hear your experience in the industry and how that went. And yeah.
Yeah. So I graduated way back in 2004. and I dove right into like full-time teching right away. I worked in a clinic that was fantastic for utilizing tech skills. So I pretty much hit the ground running. Really big hospital in Edmonton, and they taught me a lot of skills very quickly. But it was super high stress, like a environment, which is often vet clinics can be that way anyway. Like I do think there's a lot more coming out there with new, better environment, I would say, just being more mindful of the stress and
burnout, the
compassion fatigue that comes with the job. But it was very much hustle at that point when I first came out of tech school. And so I worked there for a couple years. Then I moved to another clinic for a short time before actually moving to White Court. So I want to say I moved to White Court at the end of 2006. So I only worked full-time in a clinic for 2 years, actually.
Right. Right. And then you went to part-time after you had your kids.
Yeah. So I didn't work in a clinic for a short period of time when we first moved to White Court. And then I went back part-time once I had my kids, which was honestly really fantastic. It was still very high stress, no matter what.
It is.
And then you also add the rural clinic environment into it, where there is no emergency clinic to send your pet to if they're outside of the regular hours. Yeah. So it was, as much as, you know, you like to get out on time, there was often times you didn't get out on time, and it was very busy, didn't get to eat lunch. If we were eating lunch, it was at our desk, or there's not a very nice term that a lot of the staff use about the counter where all of the snacks go.
Yep.
And that's like, clients are wonderful. They always bring snacks, but they're just
they do
healthiest snacks. So, it was high stress, but at that time I had a lot of balance because I was not there full time.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and that is a huge thing to, for mental health, for vet techs and stuff like that, to be able to have that flexibility to go part-time is huge, because it is such a high stress job. And I mean, there is a reason why the average life career of a vet tech is only 5 years.
Yeah. And I don't know, I don't really know what it would be at this point for how long people stay in the profession, but and I think because I was part-time, I was at the clinic I was at for over 10 years. So I stayed there for a long time. And so my role changed over that time as well. Originally, I just mainly did surgery and helped with hospitalized patients, that sort of thing. As time went on, I did more inventory ordering. I wasn't clinic manager at all, but I helped with a lot of those things. So it really shifted. But what actually pushed me out the door, funny enough, is I had been coaching nutrition. I had actually applied for a job as a group fitness instructor. So that kind of started my coaching on the fitness side. So I worked part-time doing that while I was still at the clinic. And then I found canine fitness certification through the University of Tennessee.
Amazing. That's so
Which,
cool.
yeah, so the process literally took from the time my daughter was 6 months old. I had had this idea until, well, she would have, that would have been almost, she's a 2008 baby, and I left, or I took that program in 2019, I
Yeah.
believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a long road to get there, but I finally found the program that I was looking for so that I could basically teach dogs how to do fitness.
That's amazing. I love that. So tell me about that course. Tell me,
Yeah, it was really, really cool. So you have to be either a vet tech, a veterinarian, or prove your experience with animals. So there were some breeders, some dog trainers, that sort of thing in there that took the course. But it was there was an online portion, which was a lot of anatomy. It's a good refresher on anatomy for me. And
Right.
then I actually flew to Oklahoma and did an in-person week where we did labs and hands-on training, which was really, really cool. And so Bobby Lyons is who basically ran the course, facilitated it. And so she's a dog trainer who got very, very knowledgeable in fitness for dogs. And it's incredible what she can, focus on muscle-wise to build strength in dogs so that they live really well-balanced lives.
Yeah.
So for a lot of people, they don't realize that dogs, a lot of dogs don't know they have back feet.
Interesting.
Their back feet just follow.
Yeah.
And so teaching dogs like hind foot awareness, and so that you can shift their weight so that they're more evenly distributed, it really can make a big difference in injury prevention. Because if you think about dogs carrying most of their weight on their front limbs, and then suddenly if their back end isn't strong and even more weight goes to those front limbs when they're running, that's how we get shoulder injuries, we get that sort of thing. So it's been very, very enlightening on the injury prevention side
Yeah.
of things. So a lot of people will describe canine fitness as prehab rather than rehab, right? So
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
let's give the dogs the skills so that we can avoid surgery, we can avoid injury as much as possible, right? Like, obviously we can't, like us, we can't avoid injury 100%. But if we can build strong dogs,
Yeah.
then that's going to save us some money in the long run as well.
Well, for sure. And I mean, this brings me back to when I was a vet tech. I worked at a clinic where we did a lot of ACL repairs and like bone surgeries and stuff like that. And you know, how many fat Labrador retrievers do you know go chasing after a ball and they come back limping on one of their hind ends because they tore their ACL? And then now the owners have to fork out ton of money for you know, very difficult TPLO surgery, which has a long rehabilitation time. Yeah, it is just thinking about like how many of those injuries could be prevented with the dog, just like humans, being strong and fit.
Yeah, and even like a really easy takeaway for people listening back to this, is that things to think about: warming your dog up. So not, walking out of the house and chucking that ball and having them run full tilt. That's a big thing, is that we just think, oh, they can sprint from the couch to sprinting. Like, what would happen if we did that? We could never not warm up. Well, some people might, but in a really good program, you're not gonna not warm your body up before you start.
Yeah. And well, and I have to think like I ride horses. So when I get on my horse and I ride her, I'm not just going to full tilt, let her take off running. No, I warm her up. So why would somebody not want to do the same thing with their dog?
And sometimes, like on the behavior side of things too, is people always think, "Oh, my dog's so crazy on a walk. He's pulling. He's doing all of this stuff." And it's like, well, warm them up. Get them engaged with you before you go out on the adventure, because they're just excited about life to be going on that walk, and there's so many smells and so many exciting
Course.
things.
Yeah.
And now I don't do obedience by any means, but just there's a lot of the aspects of the fitness side that help with obedience because you have a dog who is well exercised, not just ran all day long, because that actually doesn't help their brains that much. And you can have a tired dog who is happy and healthy and strong.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like I remember doing puppy classes with our dog when he was a puppy. And I mean, like he was absolute, you know, just like any other puppy in the world, batshit crazy puppy, but puppy classes would wear him out. And it's a, you know, not a large space. So it's not like he's running around like crazy, but he's using his brain. And he would always like just crash for the rest of the day after we would do our puppy classes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, Canon Fitness is kind of based on a few things. So you work on strength, work on balance, flexibility, but that the fourth piece of what we work on is mental. Mm-hmm. And so any new exercise that you teach a dog is a mental exercise.
Right. Okay. That makes sense.
So you typically don't want to throw five new exercises at a dog. You want to start small because their mental capacity, when they're learning that many new exercises, it's hard for them to learn. Mm-hmm. It would be kind of like teaching a kid, well, we're going to teach you how to add and subtract, multiply and divide all in one day.
Right. Yeah. You would never do that.
It's like that build up. So that's the one thing that I love about Canine Fitness is it's baby steps. And people think, well, I can never get my dog to do that. Well, you got to start here at these little tiny baby steps, and then you do get there. And it's amazing how quickly they learn when you both understand each other.
Yeah, that is so cool. I love that so much. So how do you tie in dog fitness to human fitness and put them together? Because that's what you specialize in.
Yeah, so it's very individual. So I have some clients who want every workout to include their dog. I have some clients who don't want their dog to be included in their workout aside from walking, and that's totally okay. It just depends on each individual. But we'll talk about the people who want their dog in their workout.
Yeah.
So what that looks like essentially is when the human is resting, the dog is working.
Oh, I like that.
And then so when the human is working, then the dog is resting. So it's very built very much like any strength program. You're not like completely resting during that time. You're working with your dog a little bit too. So sometimes the rest periods might get stretched a little, just depending on what you're working on. But generally speaking, they're still about that 60 to minute and a half.
Yeah. Long. Yeah. That's awesome. That's cool. Yeah. So, yeah. And it's also just the kind of killing two birds with one stone and increasing that bonding time between you and your pet.
Yeah. And so like another piece of it too. So like you warm up together, you cool down together. You each have your own little parts, but bits of it we can kind of incorporate together. But also I incorporate things like sniff walks. So for anybody who doesn't know what a sniff walk is, basically it's just allowing your dog to sniff as they go. And if they want to stop and sniff something for 30 seconds, they can stop and sniff for 30 seconds.
Right.
One thing I know about sniff walks and a lot of women is it's incredibly painful for them.
Okay. I am totally that person too, because I get like irritated by it, where I'm like, no, we're going, why are you stopping?
Yes, but the one thing that most moms struggle with is downtime.
Yep.
And so if I can schedule you a sniff walk in with your dog, you know that that time is for that. When your dog sniffs, I have you breathe. Like just like look at the trees, look at the grass, if there's grass or snow, whatever is in your, and actually take a moment to be calm and present and decompress. So
I love that.
We can bring a lot of like elements of a very well balanced, healthy lifestyle while incorporating your dog who you're going to want to spend time with anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. So did you start doing this type of training in person and then transition to online? How did that come about?
Yeah. Good question. So I finished my certification in COVID.
Great times.
my very first class was actually offered over Zoom. Mm-hmm. So I kind of had to get comfortable with Zoom really darn quickly. Yeah. And once we were allowed to be in each other's presence once again, I started offering in-person classes. So my program has evolved over the years. So originally I just had them be separate. So I coached nutrition here on its own, and then I did Canine Fitness on its own.
Okay, so kind of two separate demographics initially.
Yes, yeah. So anybody, like men, women, whoever had a dog could join the Canine Fitness class if that's what they wanted to do. So I started doing that, and then I kind of evolved that into a group fitness class. So if you had taken the foundational class, you could join my group fitness class. Again, that was in person or online. So I kind of did a hybrid model for a little while. And as time went on, I decided that I would start just offering it online and bring the two programs together. And it made it a lot easier on my end, because then I could customize it to the individual. And it was actually a lot more beneficial to the dog mom and her dog, because it wasn't, you know, here's this group fitness class that I'm trying to modify for everybody and every dog. Yeah. What I realized is, as I was having dogs come and go, new dogs coming in, sometimes it causes a disturbance. So you come for your workout and a new dog has come and it sets off the five other dogs that are there who are,
of course,
you know, they all get used to each other, and then we have a change in the dynamic, which yeah. is fine. But when you're coming for a workout and you want to enjoy yourself, it sometimes can cause, you know, that not super awesome experience on those yeah. weeks that happens. So by moving it completely online, where everybody's in the comfort of their home, it makes it just a lot more of a positive, comfortable yeah. experience for everyone.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So then you kind of joined forces together with nutrition and just kind of encompassing it all into one course. So now, who do you currently generally work with? Is it focused mostly on dog moms, or is it just, you know, anybody with a dog who wants to get fit and healthy? Where do you kind of niche down, we'll say?
Yeah, I typically work with moms who are ready to build outward and inward strength. So, you know, the ones, dog moms who are around that 40 and up, where they're, you know, ready to kind of reclaim themselves and find themselves again, really, right? Because you kind of get lost along the way when we have kids, and you're moving into a little bit more of an independent time once again. And so remembering who you are and building that strength.
I love that so much. And so for you, when did you, I guess, I want to kind of go back to when you were a vet tech and you were doing kind of your double life as a vet tech and fitness instructor. When did you decide to take the plunge out of the vet tech life?
This is a really good question. So it would have been the end of 2018, Christmas time, right before Christmas. It's very, very vivid in my memory. I actually asked for a change in my position at the clinic I was at. I had asked them if I could take on a client care role. I really, really enjoyed, if I had a patient that was there all day that needed care, that sort of thing. I should rewind a bit. I was starting to get really bad anxiety when I was doing anesthetic, and surprisingly, even when someone else was doing anesthetic.
Yeah. Did you have like a negative experience that kind of started that, or was it just an accumulation?
Just an accumulation. Like we had some, like any anesthetic, there's risk, right? So of course, yeah. over the course of years that I was a vet tech, yes, there were some anesthetic things that had happened, but nothing that wouldn't yeah. be normal. Right. So there wasn't an event, there wasn't anything. It was just, my body was just telling me, like, this isn't for you anymore. So I would be sitting at the computer doing some like office duties, and I would see out of the corner of my eye the ventilator bag that mm-hmm. was anesthetic. And if it looked big at all, I was off that chair and checking it like immediately. So
yeah. Let's talk about that really quick for those who don't know. So for those who are not anesthetic and or vet tech people, the anesthetic bag is what's connected to the oxygen and the inhalation anesthetic that keeps an animal under. Now, with that bag, there's a little valve. It's called a pop-off valve. If that pop-off valve is closed, what it does is it pressurizes the system, and that bag will get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And this pressure is not only building up inside this bag, but it's building up inside the animal, and it can kill an animal. So it is something that vet techs are just ingrained. If you're checking that pop-off valve every 10 seconds, because it is that important. So yes, yeah. I when you say that, I understand the anxiety, because if you see that bag start to build up, it's like, oh shit, is that pop-off valve closed? Because if it's closed, this is a very, very big problem. Yeah.
So I was just like, this isn't feeling right for me, but I was still fully enjoying any sort of client care situation. So if a dog needed a special diet or was diabetic or had Cushing's disease, any sort of chronic disease that needed long-term care that I could support, I loved that. I like to build those relationships with the people and with their animal. And so I requested that sort of position. And unfortunately, it was declined.
That's too bad.
Yeah. And so I think basically they didn't potentially see it as a way for the clinic to make more revenue.
Right. Which is unfortunate because it is such an important position to have as a clinic.
Yeah. And I think with client retention, that would have been a huge revenue maker. Right. So you're just building that rapport and people will talk about their experience at that clinic because they had such great care, and that's going to only, you know, make things better. But people have different visions, and it wasn't the right vision, and it was probably no for a reason. It was no, so that I actually took a step away from being a vet. So I remember Christmas holidays, I wrote my resignation letter, and when I got back to work on the first day back in January, when I went, I slid it on the desk and I walked out the door. And that was kind of the
dang.
Yeah.
That is, I remember handing in that same resignation letter at my clinic, and it is like, it's now or never. And it's like, it's do or die. Now I have to do this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was very freeing. So in saying that, there are parts of me, like, I will always be a vet tech.
Yeah.
Same. There, you know, like, it's just, it's still ingrained in me. I want to know when someone's animal is ill. Like, I want to know what's going on. I want to know what's happening. Can I help you in any way? Like,
yes.
Or anything, not necessarily.
Tell me the cool stories. I want to know the cool stories. Like, my friends who are still vet techs, I'm like, tell me the cool story.
Yeah, send me the ultrasound.
Tell me about the dog's diarrhea. Tell me about, you know, the disasters of a day that you have. I want to hear the gossip still. I just don't want to be there.
Yeah. And I will say, like, probably of the things I miss most is like hospitalizing, like nursing that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And putting in an IV and pulling blood. Yeah. Like, those are things. I'm like, so. Yeah.
For me, in a very, very twisted way, it's the, oh shit, all hands on deck emergencies. It's the adrenaline rush. That's exactly what it is. It's the rush. It's the adrenaline rush that I miss is the, oh shit, we have a hit by car and it's gone downhill in a hurry. Like, that's what I miss, because it's like, you just got, everybody has to like gang together because you're a team. You're not one person taking on this situation. You've got, you know, everybody just finds their role in their place and you're just doing your thing. And it's like, it's fun in a very sick and twisted way.
I know it is kind of bizarre in that way. I didn't love hit by cars. I was one of those people that would be like, I will be here if you need me, but like,
hey, and those people are important too, because somebody's got to keep the appointments going. Like, you know, everybody has their role, and you got to like take on your role, whatever that is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's so funny. Like, when an emergency hits, you still, like, you just take on that, like, you're in it. It doesn't matter. But yeah, if there was enough hands on deck and I didn't have to do the emergency, I was like, I'm good.
Yeah. No, that's definitely fair. Yeah. That's the one thing that I miss, that and like the cool shit, like the cool cases and stuff like that, that we used to do, especially at the one clinic that I worked at, where we did a lot of, like emergencies and surgeries and things like that. It was just, you just have to see some cool shit. And if you're that type of person that's interested in it, like,
And like, that was, so those are the things I miss. But thankfully, where I take my one dog has a lot of anxiety. And so I take her where I used to work, and that is really wonderful. And she doesn't believe in overstressing a dog if she doesn't have to. So I get to do basically help her with the exam, so I can kind of give her the info, and so I still get to do that. I'm sorry that noise is going off nonstop.
That's okay. Yeah. No, and it is kind of nice, like, just kind of putting your brain back into it. Like, my cat got into something earlier
in like later in the fall this past year. I don't know what he got into. Who even knows? He was very, very sick. And like my best friend, thankfully, she's still attack, and she got me in at their clinic. And of course, it was like, I think it was like a Friday afternoon or something crazy like that. And so she was just like, okay, you're going to restrain. I'm like, oh, I guess so. So yeah, we had to pull blood. We had to do all the things. And I'm like, oh, this is kind of fun.
It is a lot of fun. Well, even there was one day I was in there. Oh, so when my female got spayed, I asked, the behaviorist I was working with had suggested I be there with her, like until she goes under. And when she wakes up, that I'm there with her, because it just helps with,
yeah,
keeping her anxiety lower. And so again, I'm super grateful that they're very accommodating to me and allow me to do these things. And so she was, they were doing another surgery. She wasn't on yet. And I was just hanging out in the back basically. And one of the vets like, hey, can you look at this slide? I'm just like, what do you think of this? I'm like, yes, I can look at this slide.
So I'll do it for free.
Yeah. It's cool to, you know, to still have like those moments where I can still experience it a little bit.
I don't even think I would recognize anything on a slide. I can recognize a red blood cell and I can recognize a neutrophil. And that's about it.
I can't even remember what I was looking at.
I could find ear mites. That's one thing I can find.
Yeah. I could probably identify crystals as well.
Yes, that's true. In like a really, really, really blocked cat.
Yeah. But yeah, no, like it's, you know, life always takes you on the path that you're meant to be on. And I think everything that happened along the way was meant to be that way.
Totally. So how was that feeling of like, okay, I quit being a vet tech. I'm heading into a different direction in life. How did that go? How did that path get you to where you are now?
Well, it was scary, like really scary, because I basically, not that I made tons of money as a vet tech, but it was consistent income, right? Yeah. So that was probably the biggest, scariest piece, is that income was pretty much gone. But you know, everything kind of evolved. I had a business coach when I first started. She kind of helped me with some things. I was in that program for about 6 months. Mm-hmm. Then I kind of did it on my own for a while again. And then I signed up with another business coaching program, which that has kind of been the biggest change to my business overall, was over that year of just getting things more fine-tuned and the business side of things. Coaching always came relatively easily to me, but running a business is not so easy all the time.
Dude. I was a vet tech, not a business person. Yeah, I hear that.
Yeah. So like that piece of it was kind of like the biggest change. But also through that experience, I also became a better coach too. Just being exposed to so many coaches and hearing different perspectives and how they kind of manage difficult, I would say difficult situations, right? Like people that you got to kind of, there's sometimes like a puzzle and you have to figure out what is the right fit for them. And that has been a really big, amazing part of my journey as well. Yeah. And met a lot of really great coaches like you. Funny enough, we were in
the and turns out we only live like an hour away from each other.
Yeah. So bizarre. I just remember seeing, so Jackie commented on a post in that business coaching group and said something about Alberta, and I was like, hey, wait a minute. That looks familiar.
So that's awesome. And I mean, it really goes to show like the true value of learning from other coaches and other people in the industry. A lot of people think that it's like, oh, this big competition thing and, you know, we're all competing for clients and that kind of thing. But in all honesty, like it's, if you can take the time to learn from other coaches and how they do things, maybe they have a different specialty than you do and that kind of thing, like it's invaluable what you can learn from others.
I'm just gonna pull something up here. I'm gonna share. So another coach engaged in my post today, and I just thought it was so nice what he said. And I just said I just thanked him for, you know, engaging in my post and whatever. And he said, "A rising tide lifts all boats. We've got to make this industry better."
I love that so much. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So like, and I met him through the coaching program too. So
yeah.
And I like that we can all collaborate. We can mm-hmm. get better together.
Yes. Yes. Because, learn from each other. Like I've reached out to a few coaches in the group because they just have different specialties. Like there's one coach in the group that deals with people with injuries and pain and things like that. And, you know, another coach in the group that deals with women who struggle with endometriosis and PCOS, like they are invaluable people for me to learn from, as well as other experts in the field. Like, you know, doctors, endocrinologists, physical therapists, all those types of people are also really, really valuable to just add to our knowledge and expand our knowledge base. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's been a privilege to meet all of the people that I've met over the past year and a half. And I really have grown substantially as a person too, you know, not just the business side, but just growing as individuals and.
Yeah. 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 And as a coach too, and being able to help your clients more and better, you know, bring them better value to what you're doing, that also passes off to your clients. Huge.
Yeah. Well, and if you think about like anybody on any journey, you're facing challenges. Getting outside of your comfort zone isn't different in any of those places, really. It's just different levels of it, right? So somebody just starting a fitness program versus someone who's always been fit, but now is working on their nutrition, they're still both out of their comfort zone. So you experience a lot of the same feelings, a lot of the same, you know, those self-doubt things that pop up in your head and
having to battle and change habits, good and like, you know, especially bad habits, or not necessarily bad habits, but change your mindset towards things that maybe have been stuck in a certain way for many years. Like that is hard shit.
It is. And the stories we tell ourselves, right? Yes. Like just things that come out of your mouth, like, oh, I always do this. Well, do you really always do that? Mm-hmm. Or can you do something different? But what we tell ourselves is kind of what our brain thinks is real. So.
Well, exactly. And I mean, like how many women do you know, clients, you know, they always just ate very little, stuck to the same diet. I always did Weight Watchers. I always would just go back to keto because it worked or whatever it is, but not really understanding that there's a whole different approach that you can take to it that is more sustainable and better for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I just had a new client intake today and her calorie amount, she was just like completely blown away by how much food she was going to get to eat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And she struggles with like celiac and they're exploring rheumatoid arthritis right now. And it's something people don't always think about is that if you're always restricting your calories and you have an autoimmune disease, you're not doing your body any favors.
No.
You're just adding that more stress and more, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, it's really fun to have people eat more food. It's probably
my
favorite thing.
Yes. One of my favorite things too is when, especially somebody who is chronically dieted on the old 1200 calories for however long, or they feel like they've been dieting for forever because there's a bit of a difference. And then you kind of get them to switch their mindset away from, you don't even necessarily need to follow a specific diet in the term of like, we're thinking keto diet or paleo or whatever the fuck is out there, but just changing their mindset towards food is huge for people.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can eat that forbidden food.
Forbidden.
The forbidden food that you think is forbidden.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. The foods that everybody cuts out, they think that they have to cut out and God forbid they have a piece of pizza or a fucking cupcake and it ruins their life. You know, learning how to balance those types of things and that, like, again, like going back to changing your mindset towards food.
Yeah. Yeah. There are no good foods or bad foods.
Yes. Completely agree.
That's just the way it is. It's their food. They don't hold emotions.
Yes. No moral value unless you're, you know, beating your grandma with a bag of mini eggs. Yeah. But even then, it's really you. It's not the food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So how did you find, I guess there's no such thing as a balance, but how do you find yourself balancing mom life, fitness life, and those kinds of things, because I know you and I are kind of in two different eras of momness in our life, where you're kind of in the teen era with, you know, the older kids, and I'm still stuck in the toddler young kid era. So yeah. How have you found, I guess, not necessarily balance, but I guess priorities in terms of your health and fitness shifting, changing, all that, because it is always ever changing. How have you found that over the years, coming from a mom in the thick of it with 2 under 5?
Yeah, so you're probably going to want to reach through this screen and punch me when I say this. But I was not running a business when my kids were little.
Valid point.
So every stage is hard with kids. I'm just going to say that.
Agreed.
So when I say it was relatively easy for me to maintain my fitness and that sort of thing when my kids were little, I would say it was to some extent, because I just went to the gym daycare, and I said it was, because it was a habit in my life already, it was easy to kind of just keep that going and build that in. Mm-hmm. But I understand that's like me being an asshole by saying it was easy, because it probably wasn't actually that easy. But when I look back at it,
your perspective on it changes. No, it's true.
But again, I was working part-time. I didn't have a business to kind of build and maintain. So it really is all perspective. If you're a working full-time mom with toddlers, there's nothing easy about that. If you are a full-time stay-at-home mom with toddlers, there's nothing easy about that. No matter what your situation is, it's challenging. It's just remembering that there are hours in the day that you can prioritize yourself.
Totally.
And it may mean taking them to the daycare. It may mean asking someone to take your kids for a play date or exchanging that so that you each can get some time for yourself.
Yeah.
But you know what, when my kids were little, we're from a small town, I had a really good community. I had a lot of people who loved to be active and fit. There was a stroller fit class. I did things that fit my lifestyle at that point in time.
And got you out of the house.
It got me out of the house, yes. Yeah. Now we're at the point where it is like, I find I'm at the hardest point in my health, maintaining my health, than I have ever been in my life, to be completely honest.
Okay.
I gained weight over the last like couple years that I never really had a hard time like kind of maintaining.
Yeah.
But what changed is, I'm now an online coach who actually sits in front of a computer most of the day.
So your activity level.
Yeah. So my daily activity level just dropped substantially. So I now have a treadmill at my desk. I do things to incorporate movement more into my day, and I have to actually remind myself of that, because we can get stuck in like that zone of, you know, it's your business, so the only person who is going to make it grow is me, it's you. That's how it goes, right? And having teens means they both play competitive. Well, my daughter competes as a figure skater, my son plays competitive hockey, and we're in the car a lot.
Yep.
Because we're traveling.
Mm-hmm.
So just the activity piece is just making sure that I'm prioritizing that movement has been the biggest thing I've had to pay attention to.
Yeah. Yeah. And it goes to show that like we're not above anything, that life and busyness catches up with even personal trainers, and that, you know, sometimes we have to reel ourselves back in and go, oh yeah, I have been sitting for a lot during the day working on my business, which is great. But I also need to still prioritize my own health.
Yes. Yeah. And nutrition has, like, over the years, as I developed those habits, became fairly, like, standard and basic. But when you're gone all weekend and the meal prep doesn't happen like it used to, you have to learn new skills. Like, I had to learn new ways. And, you know, I have to do meal prep on Mondays now versus Sundays, and just moving things around, where Thursday nights need to prep for the weekend coming up. So it's just shifting the way things were before.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And knowing that as, you know, transitions in different phases of our lives, like there's going to be some discomfort and changes, and we have to kind of figure out what works for us now that we're in that next phase. Mm-hmm. But sometimes there's bumps, and it takes a little while to figure that out.
Yeah, exactly. I get that. 100%.
But I also hired a coach for myself last year because I had done it on my own forever and ever.
Yeah.
I had a personal trainer once, like early on, I think I was, when I was talking about like when I wanted to drop the weight for my wedding. Mm-hmm. But I had never had like a coach that like my whole life before. And yeah, so still have my coach. I signed up with his coaching in February of last year, I believe.
Yeah.
And yeah. I'll be with him till August for sure. And then, you know, chances are after that too.
yeah, when they're worth it, they're worth it.
They are. And like a lot of people think, well, I can just do it on my own because I've done it before. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you, if you have a lot of mental load and then you have to build your own training plan, your nutrition plan, all of that, it can get put on the back burner because you have to do that for other people. So,
yeah. Yeah. And yeah, no, it's 100% true. And like we talked about before, coaches need coaches. And there's something really, really valuable about learning from other people and getting firsthand experience with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how about for you? Like what do you find is your biggest struggle with like running a business, having toddlers?
It's the toddler part. it's just honestly, it's a lot of having to roll with the punches. It really is. It's like, okay, you know, a couple weeks ago, I had this grand plans for a really busy week. I was going to do all this work on content, work on my business. I was going to do a podcast, all this kind of stuff. But then my kid got sick and I had to keep them both home because my daughter got my youngest got hand, foot, and mouth. Well, what the fuck? So now I have to keep them both home all week. Totally derailed the plans for the week. So, okay, I'm now having to work during nap time. Miss Rachel's babysitting, you know, having to work after they've gone to bed, like, you know, and just having to just also, I don't know if put up with is the best word, but just, I guess, lower my expectations of myself for that time.
Yes. Yes.
And exactly. Yeah. And just adjust. And I mean, it's hard, especially when it's like, I know, you know, when you have calls with clients and I like to do them over, you know, like face-to-face, Google Meet, Zoom, that kind of thing, because I like to see people's faces. And I got a sick kid. So, okay, can I, you know, I don't really like to reschedule it because, you know, we all got busy lives. And if you made time for something, you made time for something. But also it's like, okay, don't mind Miss Rachel in the background. Don't minding the kid screaming E-I-E-I-O during our like, I don't know. This is life. I don't know what to tell you. Most of my clients are moms though. So they're like, I get it because their kids are also usually in the background screaming for a cheese string and old McDonald's and stuff.
Totally. So thankful that same thing. I have teens now, but, they still make interruptions too. Opening my office door sometimes.
Yeah.
Normally they know like the door is closed. That means I'm in a meeting. You can't open it. But my phone was going off because my kids I'm on Do Not Disturb, but my kids can text through.
Yeah. Same with my husband. Yeah. Yeah.
And so my daughter was like sending me a million texts. Can you stop texting? Are you in a meeting? Text, text, text.
What are you doing? Why aren't you answering? Mom, I need my chapstick.
Well, she just got her license last week.
Oh, okay. So we're a little on high alert right now.
So my daughter does kind of a modified school program. So it's essentially an outreach school, but she is a very high achiever and was getting a little bit bored with regular school and decided she wanted to fast track high school. So that's what she's doing.
Wow, so she's good for her.
Yeah. She does go into school, like a school, once or twice a week just to kind of check in with the teachers. But yeah, so she was letting me know she's going to study. So that's another part of like being a mom to a teen and having them drive out the driveway. That is a different feeling.
Oh, I don't look forward. Like there's a part of me that's like, I remember that feeling at 16 and like how amazing it was to get my license. Like I could not wait to get my license because I grew up on a farm. And if I wanted to get anywhere away from my family, I needed to have a driver's license. I wanted my own driver's license. So it was like 4 days after my 16th birthday. I got it so fast. And I remember being the best thing ever. But as a parent now, thinking about my kid driving, I'm like, okay, she's like, my oldest is 4, so we're a long ways away, but still I'm like, oh my God, that's scary. Like, my parents let me drive a motor vehicle when I was 16. Do you know how dumb I was at 16? I was so dumb. And I wasn't even the dumbest of all my friends.
Yeah, she went and picked up her friend on the weekend. And when, like, I've known this girl for her whole life, basically. And so when she got to her house, she's like, she's a really good driver. She did so good. I was like, oh, sure. You're just pumping her up so that her mom feels safe with her driving. But
yeah,
she's a very responsible kid. I will give her that.
That's good. Yeah. That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. But like with you saying like, you know, your daughter's only four. Mm-hmm. I'm not kidding you. I know everybody says it. It happens fast.
Yeah.
But it really does.
Even the first like four, well, I guess she'll be five in this summer. So I guess like almost the first 5 years has gone by super fast. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's bizarre. So both my kids are driving now because my son just got his learners as well. Mm-hmm. All within like a month of each other.
You're like my insurance.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it's very bizarre. Do you have a girl and?
I have two girls. Two girls.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, boys are a little different, you know, like girls, I think, stay more connected to their moms. Boys start to kind of push their moms away a little bit once they hit that 14-year-old. I think girls can too, but just my experience, my son is one that's pushing
yeah. away.
So.
Yeah, that's fair. That's definitely fair.
Yeah. Well, and probably in a situation where you have more than like two girls, maybe one of them will be that more push away then.
It's definitely possible. I mean, their personalities are quite different in a lot of ways. So, I mean, we'll only see because my youngest is only two. So she has a lot more personality to develop. But the personality that I've seen so far is very different than her sister.
Is your youngest a wild child?
Yes, she is. Wreck-It Ralph, Tasmanian Devil, all just like mixed in together. Yeah, she's hilarious. Like she's, it must be like definitely people warn me about the second child, and it seems as though it's definitely true. My oldest was very like as a toddler, you know, she got into like just like little funny things, like, you know, emptied a Kleenex box or like that kind of stuff, you know, took a bite out of every apple that was in like the bowl. My oldest is like up in the counters going through the snack cupboard. She's not even two yet. And she's like on the furniture, like on top of the table, on top of the furniture. I can't keep her off my fucking kitchen table. Like, you tell her no for a snack, she'll be like, you know, she wants it. She'll say banana, apple. I'll be like, no, she doesn't give a fuck. She'll get a chair and go get it herself. Like,
That's
a honey badger.
Yeah, like, and what was I gonna say? Just when my son was not two, he was in a crib. We were doing some work outside of his bedroom. Like, we have a laundry kind of area right outside his bedroom, and because they had all this mess out, we had put both my daughter and him in the crib just to hang out while we were doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
And she crawled over.
Yeah.
And showed him that he could crawl over, and that was it. He wouldn't stay in his crib anymore.
Oh, that's so annoying. My daughters have gotten into the point where she's she's not quite climbing out of the crib yet, but she's taken off her clothes, which is fun.
Oh, I remember all of these things.
Yes. Whereas like my oldest was just like my sweet, mind you though, I don't know. She was just like my sweet little buddy. And she was only 6 months old when like COVID first happened and stuff. So we were very much like at home with her all the time. And yeah, she was just like my little buddy and came with me everywhere we went. And it was just the best. And so maybe that's also like why my second is a little bit more Tasmanian Devil, in that I'm splitting my attention between the two of them and trying to run a business at the same time. So maybe this has something to do with it. But
yeah.
She's a lot of fun and a lot of like, you're going to give me a stroke one day.
Yeah, my second is the daredevil as well. Like, he mountain bikes, he does lots of crazy things, and just I will say he's, for the most part, I think relatively thinks about things a little bit, but for a long time it was like his thing was just send it. Just
send it. Just fuck it. Let's go.
Like, oh dude. And then he shows up like bloodied face and
Like, sounds about right.
You didn't want to set it on that one this time.
Yeah. Like, maybe we should rethink that choice next time.
Yeah.
This has been great. I really enjoyed this. It kind of brought me back, like, to, you know, talking to like other vet techs and stuff like that always kind of like brings me back to the good old days and stuff like that. But tell everybody where they can find you, what you have going on for your own coaching and programs and things like that right now.
Yeah, so you can find me on Facebook under just my name, Rhonda Dalloc, or on Instagram at Healthy Concepts with an underscore after it because I had to find some interesting way to do it. Those are the main places that you can find me. But yeah, business-wise, I have my program, the Canine Evolution Experience. So that's pretty much, I'm accepting applications right now, which won't be necessarily when this goes live, but at any point in time, people are totally cool to reach out to me if you have questions about what it means to do a workout with your dog. I'd love to explain that to people because it's always a big question, like, what the heck is that?
I love it. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Rhonda. I really appreciate it.